So, yeah, but I mean, it's nice, though. It's got a good feel to it. So let's jump right into it. Y'all just released a new record, Shapeshift With Me. I am a really big fan of it, personally. I'm really curious, though, what the experience has been like self-releasing it. I know Shapeshift With Me as well as Transgender Dysphoria Blues were self-released. Correct. What has that, I guess, afforded y'all in opportunities with the record and whatnot? And what has the experience been like just working for yourself? Because I assume you're kind of going back to the DIY ethics, right?
Yeah, but no. I mean, like, to imply, for me to imply that, like, DIY ethics weren't present all along the way would be, like, a fallacy. You know, like, for the past two records, it has been great kind of feeling like, well, we can do whatever the fuck we want. Yeah. You know, there's no one else involved in it. No, like, label person giving advice or, like, interjecting. But at the same time, like, you know, all of those were really valuable learning experiences.
Yeah.
And DIY shouldn't mean, like, not working with other people. If you're a band of four people, you're already not doing it yourself. You're doing it with four other people.
Yeah.
And then, like, to extend that to your crew, you know, we have, like, four other people that tour with us. Dustin. But to not say that they're not involved in it would be diminishing as well. You're not doing it yourself.
Yeah.
We're out here doing it with 8 or 9 other people, you know? And then you got to extend that to a label and you got to extend that to other people. And now while we are our own label, we do work with a distributor and they have, like, served many of the functions that a label serves. But, you know, there's something to be said for every setup like that, for working with a label, for doing it your own way.
Yeah.
There's pluses and negatives, you know, and every label is different. Every label does things better than other labels or, you know, has its shortcomings.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're very hands-on.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that we're doing. And if it's setting up for a show, if it's making, you know, throughout the recording process, through every aspect of it, the band is very hands-on. So it's, I don't think there's ever been a aspect that has been, you know, where we're not involved.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, and maybe not ever.
That's a good point. But I mean, I think honestly, that's, you know, it seems for me that that's been a big part of what's felt like the proliferation of Against Me is it feels like you all are so, you know, like intent on being a part of, like, the art each way, obviously, and if that makes sense necessarily, but like a part of your art each, like, step of the way, and it comes off feeling very authentic, which is definitely one of the things that I preach about the records. And yeah, I am curious, I know with this one, Laura, I had read in an interview, I think it was right after Transgender Dysphoria Blues came out, you talked about possibly taking a, like, a kind of a dancier vibe with this record, which I definitely think came through. I think thematically too, it deals with the themes differ.
It's not like make people think that means, like, you know,
like, no, but it's, but I mean, even songs with, like, Rebecca, like, I remember hearing it, just kind of like,
exactly,
gosh, I mean, and it's really cool. I like it. I think it shows the evolution of the sound that you can put forth. I'm curious how conscious that was in writing, coming off of Transgender Dysphoria Blues, for both of you, and, you know, how you feel that manifested on the record.
Well, I think Laura's approach to this record was, you know, that was such a, Transgender Dysphoria Blues was such a heavy, serious record on so many levels, and this was, I think, even if it started subconsciously, maybe it manifested itself more obviously later, that it was a more lighthearted thing overall. I mean, it still deals with a broken heart and those kind of things lyrically, but musically, it had that feel from the beginning. You know, the first ideas that she, you know, presented and brought in were things that were like, oh, this is really fun, and oh, this is really cool. And then, you know, at the pinnacle, when Crash was written, it's like, oh my God, this is so much fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is really, like, the best time. And that, I feel like, was almost a centerpiece of the record, you know, the way that it is such a different type of song, you know, a different approach to, for me, such a different approach to playing.
Was that one of the first songs written for the record?
No, that was one of the last songs written.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think a lot of it too just, you know, had to do with the nature of the way the record came together with, you know, writing in between being on tour as opposed to it like being a record that came together off of the road. But like,
yeah.
you know, just like wanting songs that translate really well live, you know, like,
yeah.
that are fun to play live. That was like important, you know?
Yeah. Very cool. It's definitely a really fun record too. And Adam, I listened to your Going Off Track interview, and I think one of the parts of it that was so funny to me was when you talked about recording it and being so stoked on it,
mm-hmm.
and then just kind of being like second guessing it, because I think that just like resonated. I feel like with every musician, and you know,
absolutely. Well, I mean, that's
yeah.
every record I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
You know, where it's just like you do what you think is the greatest thing ever at the time, and you just go, could I have done that better?
Yeah.
Was that like ever write a song again?
Yeah.
Can we go back?
Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, being the drummer is like, especially starting out in bands that have no money, and the drums get done first, and you just have to commit to what you're doing, what you've done, before anybody else can move on. And then you're just stuck listening to any mistakes that you made for the next 2 or 3 days, just going, fuck that fucking thing every time. God damn it.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's a good point, too, because you're both kind of the alpha and the omega of the process, starting with the drums and then Laura obviously doing guitars, but also ending with the vocals. Is there, I guess, do you feel that there's a weird weight when recording because of that?
No, because, like, you know, honestly, there were so many, like, just, like, magical moments, like, with recording that, like, we're committed to on the spot, where it wasn't like, okay, we came up with this like great idea that we recorded, now let's go back and re-record it. It
yeah.
was like, you know, there's like
yeah.
Delicate is what we came up with. That's
yeah.
like fifth
yeah.
or sixth time playing through, and we're just like,
really?
Oh, cool, that's awesome. Like,
yeah.
you know,
and like it morphed through like three different kind of approaches and things, and then it was just like, that's it, record it.
Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't something that we even sat on for a day.
Yeah.
It's like,
so did y'all spend much time demoing everything, or no? You
it was
just
like demoed. I mean, you know, really, like, we started out New Year's Eve going into 2014, and it was like, go on tour, there'd be a song or two songs, and we're basing as a band kind of out of Michigan with Mark, who you met. He has a studio there, and he recorded the record. But because we're all spread out, but so it'd be like record a couple songs, then go back on tour, come back, there'd be a couple more songs, record them, go back on tour, come back, record a couple songs, and then you come back after 2 years of being on the road, and we're like, okay, shit, you know, like we're all tired, kind of want to take a break, but also kind of like that'd be stupid not to just go ahead and like, we have a record, let's record the record.
Yeah.
And just like knocked it out, you know, it was like ready to go. It was really kind of seamless and low pressure in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, to take more of a serious note, one of the things I really appreciate about Against Me is the political message the band has had. Laura, you've obviously you know, been involved in activism through transgender rights, as well as I think what immediately got me into the band, which is, you know, anarchist politics. I'm curious, over the years, how you've kind of seen activism change and you know, in the throughout the country, given that you kind of have this widespread, and Adam, obviously, you too, you've, you know, done so much touring. I'm kind of curious to see how.
Sure, yeah, no, totally. I mean, you know, that was really much, very much so the scene that the band was born in. Just like, you know, we started out as a band that was like playing at Food Not Bombs, like gatherings and May Day gatherings and stuff like that in the woods, you know, Ocala National Forest around campfires. Like acoustic guitar, that was part of it, you know, having the freedom of not needing electricity so you could busk on a street corner or whatever.
Yeah.
And the first, you know, fan base we ever had was activist scene. And there was a place, the Civic Media Center in Gainesville, Florida, that was like, is still there, was a real hub for activism that I used to volunteer at and work at. It was a nonprofit, volunteer run, non corporate press, London Library. You know, from there, like meeting other activists around the country at the time, like, the activist scene was really like growing, and there was like a lot of focus on the WTO in particular, with like the protests out in Seattle that happened, and it just like kept going, momentum from there. And then, you know, so much of that like changed just with 9/11 and like Homeland Security and all that, you know, that fear of being labeled terrorists, not, you know, just like criminals if you got arrested for activism. You know, I still see the connection and the thread through it all. You know, my role with activism definitely changed as we became a band that started touring more and more, just because I was not able to be a part of a group in that way, you know,
attending regular meetings or volunteering on any kind of regular basis. So definitely just like saw the opportunity with that to take on more primary role of like fundraising, and like through the band, you know, over the years we've raised thousands and thousands of dollars from benefit shows or you know, just like whatever, fundraisers by donating, you know, signed records, signed posters, whatever. And in the last couple of years doing a lot of work with the organization Gender Is Over, but you know, just trying to be involved in any way we can.
Nice, very cool. And you still live in Chicago, or you live in Chicago, but is that still something you feel like is present in Florida from the last time you've been there back there? Just because
it's changed so much, you know. No, I don't see the same scene that I saw back then in any way, and I realize I am disconnected from Florida at this point, but I know it's changed, you know, like Gainesville changed, Florida changed.
It's a different time.
Yeah.
People think that they're saying so much by saying stuff on their feed, you know, whatever it is that they post on it, and they feel like they're making such a difference or they're really speaking out by doing this, whereas before there wasn't that outlet. It was be physical, be present, be active, you know, and I think that a lot of people feel like that's making an impact. Obviously, in the past couple of months, we've seen a lot of amazing marches and people really you know, standing up for things and going out and being physically present, which I think is, it's the exception these days as opposed to the rule. And it used to be the rule. That was how you did anything. That's how you got anything said or done. So I still think it has a bigger effect to show up and march and to show up and protest or do whatever it is that you're going to do in person, because it shows that you've, you know, you care enough to take the time to show up and to do this stuff. It's, you know, the classic example of everybody supporting Bernie Sanders until it came time to vote, and they were just like, oh, yeah, I didn't make it, you know.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Well, I mean, I think you're definitely right too, because even with the Women's March, it was, you know, that spoke such volumes. And I hope that it can, you know, that the magnitude of that, you know, continues. Because I know in Denver alone, they keep having marches, which is awesome. But yeah, I just, you know, hope it can continue to be a thing. So, very cool. I am curious, do y'all ever feel that there's like a pressure with your platform, though, to, you know, constantly be saying something, in general?
Yes and no. Like, I do feel a responsibility, you know, which is a form of pressure. But like, it's also easier in a way, where like, if you're doing an interview and someone wants to talk about something real, it's a lot easier to talk about something real than it is to talk about, like, I don't know, arbitrary shit that
you
know.
What does punk mean?
Yeah.
Where do you think punk's going?
What's a selling out truly mean?
It's worthless.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. I think that's awesome, and you know, I love the message that you all keep carrying. So,
thank you very much.
Good fight. Moving forward a little bit, Laura, I am curious. I saw, on your Instagram post about your guitars. I'm very curious about. So, I watched your rig rundown. Do you still have that yellow rig?
I do have the yellow.
Okay, was that painted black, or do you just have
it? It was painted black. That was like, that's the Rickenbacker that's on the cover of our album as the Eternal Cowboy. So,
really?
Yeah, totally. Oh, okay. I smashed it at a show in Detroit at this venue, the Magic Stick, Majestic. The stage is like concrete, and I threw it in there, didn't catch it, and it broke. So when I had it fixed, I don't know why, but I was like, and can you paint it bright or black?
Yeah.
Can you make it look like a banana? And
that's
so it was done. And then like recently I had it taken into the Chicago Music Exchange, which is fantastic guitar shop in Chicago. And they customized it for me with pickups and all that stuff. And it's just kind of been a work in progress, but it's finally arrived, I think.
Very cool. Yeah, because I saw the three, and especially the Nash Jazzmaster.
Oh, I love that. I just got that. Yeah, that's like... Yes, that thing rolls. Nash guitars are great.
Yeah, because I know you have that. You also have that black telly, and then I think James has a red telly. Something like that.
Yeah.
And then you got the Hathaway.
Yeah, and I have the, what's the model? What is it? Oh, shit, I'm spacing on it.
Faraday? Faraway?
Wayfarer. Yeah, okay. Which is rad too. They play great, you know. They're great guitars, and you know, I actually the first experience with them was recording New Wave, where I played a Nash Chelly for most of New Wave. Actually, I love playing Rickenbackers live, but they kind of were problematic recording, like tuning.
Too noisy.
But no, really, it's like the G string specifically, oftentimes, especially with a Les Paul.
Yeah.
Will be like, if you're fine tuning, fine listening, they most of the times don't line up, tuning wise. But yeah, I like guitars. Fender's been actually making a lot of cool shit lately too. Like the Coronado, Fender Coronado is what I used mostly on Shapeshift with me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Through a Rickenbacker TR7, like this little tiny. Really
that's bad. Okay. So are you more of a fan of combos then?
I am. A lot of that, though, really originally stemmed from, like, the days of when you're hauling your own equipment into a venue.
It's just,
and I was always like, well, those are smaller. I can just be loud.
Yeah.
James can go ahead and have fun with his fucking
and
big heads, you know? Like, I'm just going to have combo amps.
Well, that was the funny thing about the first time I saw you all was, like, his setup. Yeah, he's got, because I know he has the Fender and the Bogner, but, yeah, the two massive orange 412s, so... finally, my last question, I guess, is more for me. So I discovered Against Me through finding Formal Clarity, researching for Formal Clarity. I was 10 when that came out, but I kind of just discovered it by chance. But I keep going back and listening to that record. It's one I hold very dear to me. But I'm curious, thematically, that's an incredibly dark record.
Right.
And a lot of it is very political, too. I'm wondering what was kind of going through your head when you were writing that.
Sure. I mean, like, politically, the political sentiments on that record, obviously, like, you know, it was written around, like, 2004, 2005, kind of the height of the Bush.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, every day you turned on the news, there was no lack of, subject matter. But, you know, mentally, like, I talked a lot about it in the book I wrote, where at the time I... was really like I was having some health issues and I was really fucked up on drugs and I had convinced myself that I was dying, and so I was just like, you know, writing from a place where I thought I was dying. I thought I had a disease and I thought I was dying, and really I just was, I mean, I did, you know, cocaine addiction is some fucking disease, I guess, but yeah, it wasn't, I, you know, it was my early 20s.
Yes.
Fun time. Yeah. But so that's the headspace I was coming from, one of paranoia and existential dread and a dark, dark place.
I don't know where you got the darkness from.
Yeah.
Well, it's just funny because it's one of those things that, like, I, you know, since I discovered it so young, like, I mean, the biggest parallel I can give is, like, I watched A Clockwork Orange when I was really young, too, but, like, going back and, like, seeing it, you know, and, like, listening to that and then really... starting to like listen to the lyrics and, you know, analyze them and kind of see, it's, you know, it's interesting. So I was curious about that.
I mean, like, Miami as the opener was supposed to set the tone of, like, growing up in Florida, I always considered Miami to be the worst place.
Really?
Like, it was just like, oh, fuck Miami.
Yeah.
Like, so being like, you know, being like, okay, we're in Miami, fucking Miami.
Yeah.
It's like saying, like, I am in the worst place possible right
now.
Yeah. Figuratively.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Well, I honestly can't thank both of you enough for your